The American Forum of the Air is dedicated to the full and public debate of all sides of all issues vital to you and your country. This afternoon, you will hear a discussion of the topic, Amend the Taft-Hartley Law, Which Way? Here with us to discuss this question are Senator John F. Kennedy, Democrat of Massachusetts, a member of the Senate Labor and Welfare Committee, and Senator William A. Purtell, Republican of Connecticut, also a member of the Senate Labor and Welfare Committee. But before the debate begins, we'd like you to hear an important message.
Ordinarily, we Americans aren't a bunch of flag wavers, but that's no sign we aren't proud of our flag and everything it represents. Sure, we grumble about inflation and taxes and too much or too little government, but the right to speak out against the things we don't like is just one reason we have for being proud. Americans have more freedom in just about everything, and because of this freedom, and because our country is endowed with abundant natural wealth, we enjoy a higher standard of living than any other people in the world. In fact, the rest of the world is more than a little envious of our high standard. Sometimes they think we don't appreciate what we have, since we don't beat our drum at every chance. Let's show them how wrong they are. Today is Flag Day, the 176th anniversary of our flag's official adoption by Congress. Today, every American should have Old Glory out where everyone can see to let the world know that we are proud of her and proud of the fact that we are Americans.
Now speaking for Theodore Granick, here is your moderator, Frank Blair.
Here now is Frank Blair.
The Taft-Hartley labor law has been an explosive issue ever since it was passed by the Republican 80th Congress. Labor leaders denounce it, captains of industry hail it, the president wants it amended. The big question is, which way? And in view of that confusion, the American Forum of the Air has invited two members of the Senate Labor and Welfare Committee to clarify the various areas of disagreement. And these two gentlemen are from highly industrialized New England. Let's begin with a question for Senator Purtell. Senator, is the Taft-Hartley law a slave labor law, as it has been called?
Well, Frank, ever since its enactment 6 years ago, Taft-Hartley has been attacked in some quarters as a slave labor law. But the record of those 6 years fails to support the indictment, believe me. During that period, union membership has increased substantially, unions have grown stronger, the inequality of bargaining power between unions and employers, which admittedly existed 20 years ago, has virtually disappeared. This law is not to say, or I want it said now about the law, this Taft-Hartley law, that it's not a perfect labor relations law. There are conceitedly some areas in which it requires revision and modification, but the basic principle upon which the law rests is sound. Its predecessor, the Wagner Act, protected the rights of employees only, and inferentially, and in time, primarily, of labor unions. Now, I'm not finding fault with that. There were situations in 1935 that probably required that type of legislation because certainly laborers, employees at that time, found themselves in an unequal position. But neither employees, or rather employers, nor what is more important, the public interest, was recognized under that Wagner Act. And the Taft-Hartley law, while continuing to protect the employees and unions, is designed to protect employers and the public as well. And the one-way street of the Wagner Act has become a two-lane highway, and the American electorate will not again abandon this principle of equality and fairness, no matter in what other respects the law may be revised. And as the record of these past 6 years demonstrates, this conclusion will be true, regardless of the political complexion of the Congress or of the administration. And I want to say one more thing, Frank. You said that business management apparently lauds the Taft-Hartley Act to the skies. I wish you'd been in to some of the hearings that Senator Kennedy and I had been in, and you would not agree, I believe, that that was a proper conclusion. They find many faults with the Taft-Hartley law.
All right, let's see what Senator Kennedy has to say. Senator?
Well, Frank, I think it is inaccurate to characterize the Taft-Hartley as a slave labor law. There is only one provision of the Taft-Hartley law which prevents, except in cases of unfair labor practices, which provides that workers have to work whether they want to or not, and that's in cases of national emergency, and the injunction only lasts for 80 days. But nevertheless, the Act is completely unsatisfactory in many provisions. It has, I think, made it far more difficult for weak unions, particularly in the South, to organize. And in cases of depression with a large pool of unemployed, it could cause a great difficulty. Some of its provisions could cause great difficulty to unions which have hitherto been strong. In addition, it freezes, beginning in 1947. It froze the country in a more or less static condition as far as unionization went, and discriminated, therefore, against areas which were highly unionized, such as New England, and in their attempts to compete with the South, because the Taft-Hartley law, with the state laws which followed it after 1947, made it far more difficult for the southern states to be unionized, particularly in textile, and therefore their wage rates have remained lower. So while I would not characterize it, nor is it really today characterized as anyone who is informed about the details, as a slave labor act, nevertheless, there are features of it which I think are drastically in need of remedy.
Well, thank you, gentlemen, for those general statements. Now, let's try to get a little specific here and cover as much territory as possible. Let's take the non-communist oath, for example. Senator Purtell, how do you feel about that? Do you think it's fair to labor that the union should have to take it and management should not have to take it?
Not only do I not think it's fair today, but I think it was not fair at its inception. I think that no segment of the populace should be asked to take a non-communist oath without asking the other party, in this particular case, management, to take a non-communist oath. I think, however, that we've got to be realistic about it. I certainly would have voted for management, the imposition of the need for taking a non-communist oath on management as well as labor, had I been at that time in a position to do so. But we must be realistic, Frank. We know that communists did try and succeeded in infiltrating unions, that here was a part of our economic structure that if they could get hold of, possess, direct, control, that they would have a great power, a great influence. And so they certainly did attempt and did succeed in infiltrating unions. But I would say this, that I think if we intend to have the oath in the law, continue it, then I would say that management should be asked to take it too. I don't think we have any right to reflect upon labor. It certainly is just as patriotic as a whole as management is.
Do you agree with that, Senator Kennedy?
Well, I think that that's a side issue of whether your management should have to sign. I don't think there are communists within management. I think there are more basic issues in this non-communist affidavit. I think it worked well at the beginning, and I voted for it, as a matter of fact, when it was put in on the floor of the House, but I don't think it works particularly well now and does need strengthening. As evidence of that is the fact that all of those unions which were thrown out of the CIO because they were communist-dominated, in every case they have signed the communist affidavit, because the communist affidavit merely provides that you should not be a member of the Communist Party, and therefore notorious communists in the mine and smelter workers or in the furniture workers, for example, have resigned from the party, said they still believe in the principles of world communism, have signed the oath. And even when they were asked whether they were members of the Communist Party or believed in its philosophy at a later date, and they refused to answer because of the Fifth Amendment, and the National Navy Relations Board therefore attempted to hold them that their petitions were not genuine, the courts provided that it was not within the power of the Taft-Hartley law. So that I think the suggested amendment, which would be to give the National Labor Relations Board the power to investigate the truth or falsity, which would provide for a retroactive status. As it is now, they just have to not be members of the Communist Party the instant they sign. They can join right afterward and make it, for example, retroactive over a year and give, the board the power. For example, if a union leader signed it and then refused to answer under the Fifth Amendment, whether he was or ever had been, then they could withdraw recognition. That's one way of improving it. The other way is to take it out of the control of the National Labor Relations Board and out of the Taft-Hartley and turn it over to the Subversive Activities Control Board and give them the power to investigate the truth or falsity of the affidavit.
Which one of these plans do you favor, Senator?
Well, I think that I agree with Senator Kennedy that the effectiveness of it probably is in the past insofar as its use in the Taft-Hartley law is concerned. I think we ought to have another agency, another governmental agency. I do, however, feel it served a very good purpose, a useful purpose, in the last 6 years. I agree with him that now perhaps it has outlived its usefulness almost. But if we do continue to have it in the Taft-Hartley, then we ought to have it apply to both parties. I believe we should have another agency of government investigate this whole communist situation as well as that existing in the labor unions.
Now, what about the matter of free speech, gentlemen? How do you feel about that? The Taft-Hartley Act, as I understand it, protects the rights of employers, employees, and union representatives to speak freely on all matters, as long as their speech contains neither threats nor promises of benefit. Now, is that fair to labor and management, in your opinion, Senator Kennedy?
Well, actually, there's nothing that everyone's guaranteed free speech under the Constitution. The only question is whether they shall be held responsible for what they say. Now, under the Taft-Hartley law, what it means is that an employer's speech cannot be considered as evidence of an unfair labor practice. To give an example, if an employer makes a speech in which says the union is communist-dominated or says that it's alien to the traditions of his area and that it will not accomplish any results, etc., then the next day he fires 10 men. He says he fired them because they were not efficient workers. The union claims that they fired them because they happen to be the union leaders. They cannot use his speech of the day before as evidence of the fact of a general bias against the union, and that is the issue. Now, my opinion is that they should, of course, permit him to say what he wants, but as in other cases, homicide cases or other criminal cases, what he says should be permitted to be used as evidence of an unfair labor practice, if an unfair labor practice should occur. So that's the only question, not whether his speech should be curbed or prevented, but whether he should be held responsible for it.
I see. Senator Pertell?
Well, I think this whole thing by board interpretation has taken on a little different angle than Senator Kennedy has indicated here. I think the Bonwit-Tulla case is one that you hear a great deal about. I think we ought to discuss it a bit. At one time, employers were fearful of addressing their employees for fear of being charged with having practiced an unfair labor act. And so they were fearful about approaching them and discussing the matter of unionism at all. As a matter of fact, they were fearful about discussing anything with them. Now, then they were granted the right of this free speech. Its interpretation, however, is something that bothers me a little bit. I think in some cases where employers have a captive audience, where they say to their employees, you shall gather at a certain place on company time, and you shall listen to me. I don't go along with the idea that the employees should have to listen to them, even if it is on company time. It's a captive audience. But there is this question, however, involved as to whether or not the employer, having such a captive audience, has practiced what we call no solicitation rule. In other words, has the employer who addresses his audience in the past indicated he would refuse to let the union solicit membership on his property and during company time or on his property, as a matter of fact? Has he prohibited other types of solicitation? Has he limited, as a matter of fact, the approach to his employees to himself alone? Now, in the Bonwit-Tulla case, if I recall the evidence correctly, and if I'm wrong, perhaps the senator from Massachusetts will correct me, in that particular case, it was true that there was a no solicitation rule, and the employer did at that time address the group, I believe, at the early morning hours of the working day on company time. And I think in that case it was held that he ought not to have done it because he had the no solicitation rule and the union demanded equal rights in that particular case. I think, however, where the unions have access to the people, where they can solicit membership, where they can talk to them on company time, then, of course, the question is whether or not this so-called captive audience should be turned over also to the union.
Senator Kennedy, do you want to comment on this?
Well, the question in the Bonwit-Tulla doctrine, as Senator Patel has said, is whether a union should have equal rights to address the employees, the management having, because of its position, a somewhat favorable position, the board held that the union should have an equal right to address them. But I think that at heart, of course, is this question of whether, in the question of free speech, whether they should be held responsible for what they say and whether it should be considered as evidence, if circumstances warrant it, of an unfair labor practice. And I think that we should so hold it, because in states which are unorganized, particularly in the South, the employer dominating the area in some cases, one company towns, has a tremendous advantage, and what he says has a substantial effect upon the willingness of the employees to join unions, and therefore he should be held responsible. That's the only
limitation. Well, except this, John. In these particular cases, he's not held as having violated having practiced an unfair labor act. No, he's simply held in the view of the board to have but done something that he ought not to have done, and there has been some circuit court decisions on that are rather interesting. Actually, he isn't charged with an unfair labor practice. They just say you ought not to have done it, and you ought not to have done it not because it's an unfair labor act, but because we, the board, think you should not have done it.
And you're in favor of what, Senator Pertell?
Well, number one, of course, as a matter of principle, I don't believe in captive audiences. I think that if I don't like it as a matter of principle, but I don't believe that the board should interpret this action on the part of the employer as being against the best interest or, as a matter of fact, being illegal when, in fact, it hasn't been illegal, except in cases where no solicitation is permitted and then the employer has a captive audience to himself.
Senator Kennedy?
Well, as I say, again, I have a quotation in the American Thread Company at Tallapoora, Georgia, where the employer said that the union's leaders were a bunch of pot-bellied Yankees with big cigars in their mouth. It comes right out of Russian, it's pure communism. Now, that is, under the Taft-Hartley bill, he is allowed to say that. This has a great effect, of course, on the minds of the workers and whether they should, the strong stand that the employer takes against the union in this atmosphere, I think, limits the right of unions. And my only statement point is that he should be held, that this statement should be considered in context. And in the case if he discharges some men for the next day, and he, the example I gave, that his speech of the previous day should be considered as evidence, as it would be in a homicidal case or similar.
All right, gentlemen, we'll continue the discussion, and we'll also have questions from members of our studio audience in just a moment after this interesting message.
Every American who wants our country to be strong, to be productive, to be secure from fear, should listen carefully for the next 50 seconds. All people in this country who can work, who want to work, are entitled to steady jobs. That's part of our American way of life. And it most certainly applies to thousands of handicapped men and women, good Americans who are ready, willing, and able to hold down jobs for which they've been properly trained. Test after test has proved conclusively that handicapped workers are steady, dependable workers, just as efficient on the job as their able-bodied fellow employees. Everybody agrees we must have top production if we want to keep America strong. So let's increase production by giving employment to every handicapped person who wants to do his share on the job. If you have a job to offer, or if you're a handicapped man or woman looking for a job, contact the local office of your state employment service.
Now here again is your moderator, Frank Blair.
Well, Senator Kennedy, what you've said in the first 15 minutes of this discussion leads me to believe that there's a lot more to the Taft-Hartley law than meets the eye. Now, let's go down into our studio audience and get some of their thoughts on the subject. May we have your question, madam, please?
My question is directed to Senator Patel. Do you think it is fair to compel workers to work on struck goods as is done under the secondary boycott provision of the Taft-Hartley Act?
If I understand your question, I am a little hard of hearing. It is a question of whether I believe that workers should be forced to work on struck goods. Absolutely not. We propose, as a matter of fact, a change in that. I am very much against employees being forced to work on struck goods, and I think you'll find that we're pretty much in one thought on that, are we not, John?
Yes, even in our committee. I would, however, in amending that section of the Taft-Hartley bill, go further than just legalizing certain other boycotts. For example, if an employer in a secondary boycott case, if the second employer, the majority of his work is with the struck plant, then he is not really a genuine neutral. He is participating in the economic struggle between the workers and the employers. And therefore, in cases where the majority of his work is with the struck plant, I believe that the employees therefore have the right to carry the strike, or at least picketing and possible strike, into that plant. In a case, of course, where only a small fraction of his work, then he is more or less a neutral, and I wouldn't change that section.
Well, who would determine the fraction, proper fraction? Let's take
I would say a greater part of his work, or over 50%.
Let's take a man who's running a bakery against whom his men are on strike, and he delivers that bread to a grocery store that sells it. Do you think they're right in...
If over 50% of the grocer's work is with the baker, then I would consider, or the greater part, then I would consider that he was not a genuine neutral, and therefore he does not deserve to be protected from any action by the employee.
You would draw that line then at 50%.
You would say that would be true
in the dress goods industry, for instance, where perhaps a man is doing contract work on dress goods. He may well have the facilities and the ability to go out and get a like amount of work. Let's say A is on strike. B operates a plant in which they do a substantial amount of the sewing for A. A is on strike. His men get down to picket B. They tried to induce, as a matter of fact, the workers in plant B to strike against the employer. B, however, may well be able to go out and get work of the same character from somebody other than A.
Well, my only point is that B is not a genuine neutral. He is participating in the economy of A company, and therefore, as he is taking part in the economic struggle, giving business to A, he is not a neutral. Now, I would say if he has less than 50%, then we would consider he was a neutral. So I would change the law to not only have struck work, as the lady suggested, but also in cases where the second employer does more than 50% of his work with the primary, with A, then I would say he was not a neutral and that the strike...
Would you say that by the same token, B should be prohibited by the actions of the workers from through strike or through picketing from going out and soliciting work from C, who was involved neither with A or B at the time?
Well, you mean now you're taking the
I'm taking the man who's doing secondary work for, let's say, in the dress goods business in New York City. A goes on strike. B is doing a good portion of his work, more than 50%. But B is not involved in the strike at all. The workers go down there and decide to, by coercion of one sort or another, to get his people to strike against him or to picket the plant. But in the meantime, B is going out seeking work from C. Well, I mean,
well,
where are you going
that
to stop
I am making, the point that I am making, in the case of a secondary boycott and not a tertiary boycott, I would permit the, if he does more than 50%. That is my suggested amendment of the Taft-Hartley Act.
All right, gentlemen, let's leave secondary boycotts right there with A, B, and C, because we have many more topics to cover. Next question, please.
Go ahead. My name is Wesley Thompson, and I'm a student at Anacostia High School. Would like to ask Senator Kennedy's opinion of the suggestion to suspend the Taft-Hartley law for 1 year and operate under the laws of the several states.
Well, I think it would be a great mistake. Mr. Lewis of the mine workers has made a proposal that the Taft-Hartley bill should be suspended. He is in a position to do it because his union is strong, but in cases where the unions are weak or workers are unorganized and want to organize, the protections given to them by the National Labor Relations Act are important. To put them at the mercy of state laws, many of which deny them what most of us would consider fundamental rights, would be a tremendous mistake and would set back the whole union movement. If you want to do that, then I would do what you suggest. But as I think that workers are given the right to organize and to bargain collectively, and I want to see that right protected, then I am in favor of establishing a national law which would have power wherever it affects commerce.
I'd like to remark upon that, Frank, if I may. Yes. I feel as Senator Kennedy does about it. I heard Mr. Lewis say to just wipe that in the Wagner Act, and of course the Wagner Act has been carried over into Taft-Hartley. All the provisions, the basic provisions of the Wagner Act are in the Taft-Hartley. Wipe them all off the book. Well, of course that's easy to say for a man who has been able to get the strength he has in his union. But as a senator from Massachusetts had said, you're penalizing the fellow who hasn't reached that point yet. And I would be against suspending Taft-Hartley for any time until such time as we have incorporated in the state laws the basic principles and minimum standards of Taft-Hartley.
There are 16 states which now have more stringent labor laws than the Taft-Hartley.
Right.
And in the Taft-Hartley bill, unfortunately, it does provide that in cases where states have more stringent union security arrangements, then the state law should be supreme. I'm against that. It seems to me that we should not permit the state law to take jurisdiction in a state law which is in contradiction to the spirit of the Taft-Hartley bill to take jurisdiction over the Taft-Hartley bill when it affects interstate commerce.
Any further comments, gentlemen? We have this question which was submitted to us by Mr. Lewis Whiteman, Executive Director of Associated Builders of Greater New York. It has to do with Senator H. Alexander Smith of New Jersey and his recent proposal of an amendment to the Taft-Hartley law which would exempt all building trades unions from provisions of that law. And he would like you gentlemen to comment on the wisdom of such a proposed exemption. I think that's been left out of the final draft of the amendment, hasn't it? That particular.
Well, I'd be very happy to comment on it. Let's be realistic again. When the Taft-Hartley law was written, I believe it had in mind industrial workers geographically pretty well positioned, located about in the same place. Certainly in its operations, we have found that it doesn't cover nearly as well your buildings trades and your migrant workers. It wasn't designed to do so, and I think those who had much to do with it in its formative years will agree. So that something has to be done about seeing that the buildings trades and the migrant workers are provided for other than what they are in the Taft-Hartley. And we have some proposals to do that. Now, time won't permit, and I don't want to deprive Senator Kennedy of his equal part of the time. Time won't permit my going into them, but perhaps Senator Kennedy has some remarks to make.
Senator Kennedy.
Well, the difficulty with the Taft-Hartley bill on the union security arrangement is that it provides that an employee has to wait, after a certain length of time, join the union in a union shop arrangement. Well, in cases that, like the maritime industry, the entertainment industry, and the building trades, where the employees are casual, they come along, they take a job, and then leave, most of them are members of the union, the language of the Taft-Hartley bill doesn't fit. And therefore, it's one of the suggestions was the suggestion you named, which I would be against. It seems to me they should be kept under the coverage of the National Labor Relations Act. But one of the proposals is to permit them to have a closed shop after 7 days instead of the 30 days to join a union and to make for the employer to be able to make arrangements with the unions in advance. It seems to me that that would be a more satisfactory way of treating those industries which are not, as Senator Patel said, great industrial, but are The employees keep coming and going from one boss to another.
All right, thank you, gentlemen. One more question, quickly.
May I just say this, that in the matter of migrant workers, suggestions have been made that provision be, that 30-day provision be eliminated, or substituted, rather. We substitute the 7-day provision instead of the 30-day provision for the need for joining a union. I think that helps the migrant workers and the occasional workers, such as those in the movie industry.
All right, Senator, your
Not
question,
the stars.
My name is Mary Merchant. I'm an employee of the CMP Telephone Company. And I'd like to direct my question to Senator Patel. Do you think
speak a little louder, please.
I'm hard of hearing a little bit.
Do you think that it's right for a federal law, such as the Taft-Hartley Act, setting up a national law labor policy to encourage the states to make tougher laws against labor than the national act itself, as is done under the Taft-Hartley?
Well, how do you mean encouraging laws to make encouraging states to make tougher laws? I don't know what you mean by encouraging the states to make tougher laws. In other words, you say that because...
Well, in one case, I think perhaps it would be the union security arrangement, where a state with a more stringent union security arrangement takes precedence might be a case.
All right. Senator Pertell?
Yes. Well, that's right. That's one particular case. But generally speaking, I think that Taft-Hartley hasn't forced states or hasn't encouraged states to make tougher laws. What Taft-Hartley tried to do, set up to do, and I think is accomplished in doing, recognize that the rights of labor had not perhaps been adequately protected back in before 1935. The Wagner Act did protect the right of the employee. They recognized then the need for protecting the right of the employer and the public. They wrote that into the Act. What Taft-Hartley's been trying to do is to serve the interest of three, primarily the public, because, of course, the actions of both labor and management affect the public. And I can assure you that on both sides of the fence, we've tried in rewriting the law to do it in a fair way.
Senator Kennedy, 10 seconds is all we have left.
Well, I think that we ought to amend the law so that the rights of the employer, the employee, and the public interest is protected,
right. And
I'm sure we can do that.
Thank you, gentlemen. You've been listening to a discussion of the topic, Amend the Taft-Hartley, Which Way? Our speakers have been Senator John F. Kennedy, Democrat of Massachusetts, member of the Senate Labor and Welfare Committee, Senator William A. Pertell, Republican of Connecticut.